Good to see you this morning. Good to be with you. It is nice to be down here in Florida. We appreciate Florida as concerning COVID, like the freedom, okay, to be able to do our own, what we think is right, to just kind of say it that way, what we think is best for ourselves. How about that? Tennessee's that way, and that's another state that we spend a lot of time in, so that's nice. Guam is the opposite. It's quite the opposite. So we'll tell you more about that in a few minutes. I know that you've come to worship this morning desperate to hear more about COVID. Am I right? Yes. So I have minimized that in my report so that you can have the smallest dose of it as possible. We appreciate David and Tracy very much. David and I roomed together for one semester, and we would challenge each other, he said. The way that we did that was by writing Bible verses on a whiteboard that we put on one of those mini fridges, right? And the one who would write the verse, then it was the other one's job to, without looking at anything, try to tell where in the Bible, give book, chapter, and verse for that verse. And so it was a good challenge. He beat me most of the time. Yeah? So you have a good man. Even going back that many, 28 years ago, still his heart and mind were very much centered on the Bible and knowing it by heart. So I love this guy and appreciate him very much. I know you do too. If you are new to the congregation here, we are the Treats. And like David said, just dropped our daughter off to be with David's two daughters there at Fried Hardeman. And we are working in an area called Micronesia. There's a country called Micronesia, the Federated States of Micronesia. But there's a geographic region also called Micronesia. And that's where we're working. And we live in Guam and work with Palau and Chuuk also. And since I was with you last, we're going to tell you about what's been going on there. Work with three congregations there. And I want to go through some basic report kind of material and then move on in the second half or toward the second half to talk about black magic and how it affects our work in the islands and how commonly the people believe in black magic. So we moved to Guam from Palau. Attitude against foreigners in Palau, and we knew that going in, so it was okay. We were prepared to address that, but it became an issue when our two older kids got into the teenage years, and we began to worry how that mentality would affect their development. And so one day I looked at Tammy and I said, it's time to make a move, and she said, you're right. And so we knew we had to leave Palau, but we did not want to leave the area because of the work that we had going with the other churches and still wanted to continue with Palau. So we drew a 5-hour flight radius around Palau and said, well, where could we move? And I could fly in here and we could still work with these congregations. And the best choice and the one that our overseeing eldership agreed with was Guam. So off to Guam we went, packed everything up into a shipping container, not a U-Haul, a shipping container. And then they came and took that and we moved to Guam. At that time, there were three congregations in Guam. This is the Barragata Church of Christ meeting inside of a home. And then there is the North Guam Church of Christ meeting on Anderson Air Force Base. And then there's the Assen Church of Christ. This is a Wednesday night Bible class there. The congregation is bigger, about 50. But this is the Assen congregation. So we had the three there. And we were working with all three of them. None of them have a regular preacher, and so it's just men filling in, and we wrote them before we moved there and said, would you like to have some help? Can we come? And they all three said, yes, we'd love for you to come. And so we did so, and one of the challenges that we faced was getting onto Anderson Air Force Base to worship with the brethren there. In the beginning, it was okay. We could just go and meet one of the military brothers at the gate. They'd get us passes. We'd go on Sunday morning. But as time went on and the restrictions began to tighten up, even before COVID, it became increasingly difficult to get onto the base. We had to go during the week and get our passes for the coming Sunday. And then it just got to where we couldn't get the passes at all. And so we met with the men of the congregation there and said, brothers, we've got a church here, we've got a congregation here, to which we cannot bring visitors unless they are already military personnel. And so it's going to greatly challenge the church to grow. So what do you think about moving the worship site off base? And they agreed that the church is very small, less than 20 people. And so they don't have enough money to be able to afford much in terms of a storefront or renting a property. So we found one that was gutted and needed a lot of work. We made a lowball offer, like a third of what the property was worth, to the owners of the property. They accepted it with the understanding that we'd do all of the repair work ourselves, and then whenever we left the property, then it would revert to them. There was plumbing, electrical, you name it, there was work to be done. And so the kids got involved, and the North Guam members did all of the work themselves, and then we were able to move in there. And then, brethren, we merged the Barragata Home Church with the North Guam Church of Christ military congregation, and then had a larger group meeting together. So that was a fun and exciting thing that we were able to be involved with since we were with you last. We had another problem, though, and that was not having enough room in our vehicle to pick up the visitors that were wanting to come. And so Tammy, we rented a vehicle on Sundays, and Tammy went one way in our minivan, and I went another way in the rented vehicle. We picked the people up and then met back at the church building, rather. And you all helped us with that situation, by the way. We appreciate it very much. This is a brother who's there in Guam, and his name is Atrico. He's a friend of mine. He's Chukis, and the first 10 years that I knew him there in Chuk, and then he moved to Guam. He became unfaithful when he moved to Guam and then got into some associations that were not good, and it's a very sad situation. He maintains his innocence, but several charges were laid against him, and he's been put in prison. He's got 11 more years to serve. So I'd like you to ask you to pray for him, though. Like I said, he's a friend of mine, and I just cannot, in my mind, consolidate him being in prison and loving him like I do. The two don't go together. So I just have to turn that over to the Lord and say the Lord will have to handle all of those things. But when it comes to the prisoners in Guam, they don't have a commissary where you load their account with money and then they go and buy their deodorant, toothpaste, and things like that. Rather, the Guam people let the family members of the prisoners bring things into them. So this is one of the things. It's an island, and most of the prisoners there are from Guam, and they have family who's there on Guam. So the number of people who don't have family is very small. The prison system doesn't worry about that. They let the family bring their toiletries in. And so Atrico doesn't have any family. They're over in Chuuk, and so we are able to provide that service for him. The interesting thing is that Atrico has gotten back right with the Lord after getting into the prison, and he now leads a Bible study in the prison twice daily. He calls me every day. He calls me every day to talk about the Bible study and ask the questions that he doesn't know. Lately, he's had someone there who's been asking about worshiping on the Sabbath, and a great many questions. Obviously, the person he's studying with has somebody that he calls and asks his questions to and brings that to Atrico. And Atrico calls me and asks his questions, brings that back to the Bible study. Anyway, it gets into some detailed and challenging questions. But my point is, Atrico is doing it. He is staying with the Bible, and he is patiently teaching twice daily inside that prison. He's got one man who's requesting baptism. And so that's exciting. We're excited to be able to be a part of that and are looking forward to talking to those prison officials to see what we have to do in order to perform a baptism there. So please keep Atrico in your prayers. He needs them. He gets very lonely. He gets very, very discouraged. We're able to send in up to 6 paperback books per drop. That's about every 6 weeks to 8 weeks per drop. And the things that he's asked for lately are a Bible dictionary and then another copy of the Ready Reference for Christians. You know that one by Paul Sane? He wore one of them completely out, and he's asked for another copy. So that's something that's going on there. Now, you know Robert Martin, and he was able to come to Guam. Since we moved there, it opened the door for the Pacific Islands Bible College to be able to come and do a course there. So he did, and here he is in the North Guam Church of Christ building, and a good turnout for the PIBC classes there. Now let me take you over to Chuuk and talk about that just for a few minutes. When we are in Chuuk, we have daily Bible studies. Usually we have group Bible studies, and we're able to study with a lot more people that way. Sometimes, however, we'll have individual Bible studies. Here we are studying with Joey Uro's wife. Joey is already baptized, and his wife Anita is not yet baptized, and so we're studying with her. And otherwise, we have just the individual Bible studies. This gentleman on with the four jersey on is last. He's a translator, and we're studying with, his name is Sepeta. We're studying with Sepeta. This is a typical house over in Chuuk. And this is a house out in the bush area, so this is what most of the people will live in. There is a town area, and there are concrete houses in the town area, but not as nice as what you live in. This is what most of the people live in. And what I'd like to point out to you this morning about this house is there's no door, there's no doorbell, there's no door knocker. If you were to approach this house, the polite thing to do would be to announce your presence before you get right up on top of the house, because it's, as you see, it's open air, and they'll look up and see someone just immediately in the doorway. That's not very polite. So you might shuffle your feet on the banana leaves as you approach and then call out, "Hello, run on in, anybody home?" And so that's what you would do in Chuuk. So like a Trico coming to Guam from Chuuk, there are other members of the church who come to Guam from Chuuk. And here are some of them. Well, one of them. The lady here, her name is Rakinta. And she is from Chuuk. I've known her all of that time, and only in the last 2 years has she come to Guam. This is her boyfriend, Otto, with whom we're having Bible studies, and this is inside our home. But they're used to the house that you just saw on the previous slide. And so when she comes over, when they come over, she's not used to the doorbell or any front door etiquette or the door knocker or anything like that. She comes to our house, they park the car on the street, and then she pulls out Facebook Messenger, how she and I communicate always, and she says, "We're here," and then I go to the front door to let them in. And so Otto gets bored with all of the waiting around, and he just lays down on the front porch until the pleasantries get finished, and then he comes inside. And so more than once I've found Otto laying down on the front porch waiting for Rakinta to message me on Facebook. And so just two different worlds, but they come together just fine, and neither one is better than the other, but it's an interesting combination to see them come together. So here we have, the lady in the blue with the stick is Atrico's mother, and his son is there also, and he's the gentleman in prison in Guam. Sometimes the brethren in the islands, they'll ask for food, and we want to help them. Jesus gave out food. We give out food. But, well, we don't want to become known for being the people who give out food. And we don't want them to see us as a source of food or a source of money or a source of helping with the electric bill, anything like that. We want them to see us as a source of spiritual benefit. And so we've got to be careful how we answer those requests. One of the things that we do when they ask for food is to give out seeds. And then they have their own time and money and effort invested into the project of getting more food. Here we bought a piglet for last, and he grew that up into a edible size. I hope you're not very sensitive to that idea, but he grew him up to that size, and then they had a piglet for their family. Here we have a market there in Chuuk, and it is a typical market. There's fresh bread. They don't have a bunch of preservatives in the bread. The bread doesn't sit on the store shelves for any length of time. If it starts to grow mold, then they throw it away. Otherwise, it's fresh bread. And then there's canned goods inside the store there. You have bananas and 5 gallon jugs of water on the counter. What else do you need, right? I mean, everything right there for life you have. One of the meals that they make is to take the bananas. The small bananas that you see that are yellow, those are fingerling bananas, and they're about as sweet as the large bananas you have, but more compact, and so they taste sweeter than what you have. The other bananas are cooking bananas, and they'll stay green. What they do is peel them and boil them and then make a coconut cream sauce to go on top of them, and it's kind of like a dessert. The banana tastes more like a potato. It's very, very bland, not sweet at all. And so they make a coconut cream sauce, and so they'll get that coconut. And the coconut you buy in the store, you may already know this, but the coconut you buy in the store is just the seed, the inside brown part of the coconut. And there's a husk around it. Like corn has a husk, well, coconut has a husk that's about 3 to 4 inches thick, so it's huge. Well, they get that big coconut out of the tree, and they get down to the brown seed, and then they'll break that open and pour the water out. They don't want the water. Then they'll take that meat, and they've got a stool that's got kind of like a fork sitting off of it. They'll sit on that stool and then rake the coconut meat out of that coconut, put that inside of a cloth, wring it, and the water that comes out of the meat, that is what they're looking for. That's the coconut milk. They'll take that, boil it with some sugar, make a cream sauce, put that on top of the cooking bananas, and it's something that's very nice. So come on, you come over with me. We'll have some coconut cream bananas, okay? That'd be great. All right. This is Isiana, and Isiana put her hand on my arm one day and summed up the work very well when she said, "Joey, we need people to come out here and help us." And what she meant was that she needed more people coming more often. Where she lives, this is a picture in town. You see a little more of structure of things behind her there. But where she lives is out. That house that I showed you earlier with no door, that's her house. And so it's hard to get to that place. You have to have a four-wheel drive vehicle if the road is wet at all. And even then, it would be questionable. If it's been raining or the road is wet, you just can't make it in a two-wheel drive vehicle. So sometimes we'll take a boat and go around. And that works as long as the waters are not very, very choppy. But even when you go and take the boat around, you can't get right up to the land because of the mangroves, and you have to take the old Japanese dock to get over to the land. The concrete has all broken down and washed away, and there are huge volcanic rocks this size. And that is the dock. And so you're walking, you know what volcanic rock looks like, and it hasn't been carved, it hasn't been flattened. It's just volcanic rock in its natural state, big pieces of it, that's the dock. You have to walk on that for 100 yards to get over to the land. And so whether you drive or whether you take the boat, it's just not easy to get there. And so what she's wanting is people to come and teach them the gospel. She's open, very open to it, and she'll call her friends in order to come hear it. But brethren, it's hard to get there. With your help, we're getting there as often as we can, and we appreciate your help very much. All right, that's Chuuk. Now let's go over to Palau. Palau is more like a second world. Chuuk would be more like a third world country, and Palau would be somewhere like in the second world kind of area. They had a sign to blow down in a typhoon recently, and they were painting that, fixing that, getting that back up. This is a brother who is working in the prison ministry there, or he's wanting to start a prison ministry. Behind him, that sign says the Department of Corrections. And so they're doing things like that. We were in a hospital. This is a hospital during the holiday season, trying to visit one of the sisters' husbands who's not a member of the church. Here's a man with whom we've had several Bible studies. And before we left Palau, we went through the Back to the Bible series with them so that they could be doing outreach after we left. And they've been working toward doing that. When we left, we were concerned about whether or not the men who were there would step up and take over the work and keep the church going and keep things moving and alive. I'm happy to tell you that they have. And here Mino is presiding at the Lord's table. He has become the regular preacher. Every Sunday, he's there in the pulpit. And so this is Sunday morning for us. It is Sunday night for them, moving on into Monday morning. And so their worship service has already completed. Other members of the church asked me on a subsequent trip about the paperwork for the church and how they file it with the government and what needs to be done. And so that tells me that they have taken the bull by the horns and they're doing what they need to do in order to keep the church moving and to keep everything right. So we're excited for them for that. Now, let me tell you what was going on during the COVID time. COVID hit there in Guam in March and April of 2020 and really shut everything down very quickly. We had one of our elders from the De Gaulle Drive Church of Christ scheduled to come out and to see the work. That trip had to be postponed. The governor closed all but essential businesses, and masks have been required in Guam in public since day one. There's never been a time, and still today, there's never been a time where masks are not required in public. The governor was not happy with how many people were still out on the roads, and so she used the U.S. National Guard to set up road checkpoints. She wanted to close the roads, but didn't have the authority to do so. And so she set up checkpoints, and as you're driving your car, these U.S. National Guardsmen, very polite people, would read a little spiel to everybody who drove by. This is interesting. We have five different levels. It's a pandemic condition of readiness. So PCOR, P-C-O-R, and there's levels 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And during level 1, the churches cannot meet, even during level 2. When it gets down to 3, then the churches are allowed to meet. And so during one of the lighter times of restriction, this bakery was open. And it says, public health mandate, stay in your car, must be wearing a mask. off AC during exchange. And so we had to turn the air conditioner of the car off whenever the person came to our window. And we would call the bakery, tell them what it is that we wanted, and then the attendant would come out, and everyone's wearing the mask, and turn off the air conditioner, give her your money, she'd give you the bread or whatever, and then she'd go back inside, run the credit card, run the ticket back out to you. And so this is some of the interesting things that we were able to weather during the height of COVID. Some of our stores were empty. We never suffered for food or water, so that was very good. The grocery stores were never closed. Over in Chuuk, this is a sister island to Chuuk, and this is one of the hand-washing stations set up for COVID there. A 5-gallon bucket with a bar of soap on top, draining into another 5-gallon bucket. And so that's some of what they did. Now, during COVID, what did we do? Brethren, we stayed busy, of course, and the first thing we did was make sure that the brethren who'd be worshiping at home, of course, we never stopped worshiping, but didn't have the option of worshiping together in the assembly. We worshiped in smaller assemblies in our homes. So the first thing we did was make sure that all the people had their Lord's Supper materials. We delivered some Bibles. We delivered food, and there's a mattress behind that young lady. Spam and rice are some of their favorite foods. Whenever we were able to worship, then of course we had to wear the mask during worship. This is Innie. She's a Filipino lady, and she's one who lost her job. Many of our brethren lost work during COVID, and a lot for months and months lost work, and so we were helping as we could. She's a seamstress, and she started sewing face masks before they were everywhere, right? And so Innie would sew the face masks, but she didn't have a place to sell them. And so my wife, Tammy, got on the Facebook page for our neighborhood and advertised the mask, and Innie sold 300 masks. And so that was good for her and something that she was able to provide for herself that way. Tammy did not keep any of the money. Everything went to Innie. We also helped Innie with doing some paperwork. She was applying for U.S. citizenship. It did not work out for her to get it, but these are the kinds of things that we help the brethren with as needed. Not being able to go to Palau and Chuuk whenever COVID started up, those countries absolutely closed their borders. They barely let food ships in the beginning. And so even today, I cannot go to either Palau or Chuuk. So what we did was we ordered a bunch of sermon outline books and other books and sent to two men in Palau and another two men over in Chuuk, and were able to help them that way. And brethren, we just stay in constant contact with them. I've been talking with them this morning and last night, as a matter of fact. Just constant contact to stay up with what's going on. We recorded some lessons on video and sent back to the States. We were involved in community projects as we could be. And here we are picking up trash alongside of the road. And here is something that you can watch a movie on Netflix if you want to. It's called Operation Christmas Drop. And the Anderson Air Force Base there in Guam, for years and years, has dropped these big boxes around the islands of Micronesia during the holiday season. And they've got food, school books, toys, just essentials for life for the islanders. And like I said, Netflix has a movie about it. The Air Force Base asks for community volunteers to help them pack the boxes. And so they've got a big warehouse, and here's a whole bunch of school books, and here's a whole bunch of rice, and here's a whole bunch of clothes. And so they'd say, now go get the rice section, and everyone just pack the boxes. So community service as much as we can. And then also just staying on top of our Bible studies and our visits and staying in touch with the brethren, trying to keep our hand on the pulse of what's going on so that when COVID did lift and restrictions were gone, then we'd be able to get right back into the work in a good way. And so that's what we did during COVID. Now let me change gears and tell you about the black magic beliefs over in the islands in the amount of time that we have left. Concerning the COVID time and the work in the church in Guam, Palau, and Chuuk, the question is it moving forward? And we're able to say, yes, thankfully, with all of the things going on, yes, the work has moved forward. But black magic is something that makes it not move forward if the people really believe in it, and they do. Here's a statement by one Chuukese man, and I'm going to read it just the way he said it. He said, "Black magic is for real. It is part of our Chuukese history. We cannot let go of something that's part of our history. It is true that when Christianity first introduced to our islands, the use of black magic starts to diminish. But if you go to Chuuk one day, you'll see that the use of black magic nowadays is very practical. Even youngsters know how to do it. Use it. Go and see for yourself. I'm not joking here. I'm serious." They do believe in it. And my interviews with the brethren in preparation for this lesson showed me how much they believe in it, much more than I even thought, even having lived there with them for a number of years. They believe in it more than I feared. And so what do they believe in? Well, like on Tanawas Island over in Chuuk, they believe that they can take a chicken and pluck all the feathers off of that chicken, do a voodoo chant over the chicken, and then use it like a voodoo doll. So if they poke the chicken, then the person they've assigned it to will feel a poke. And so how do they use that? One of the most common ways that they use that is in trying to rig sporting events. Palau and Saipan are having a softball game, and so someone's up on the mountain where they can't be seen, and they're trying to use the voodoo chicken in order to make the pitcher throw wrong so that they could win that game. Maybe they've bet on the game or something like that. The most common use of black magic are a chant and a poison put onto food. So if a person has an enemy, then they will make them a dish and bring that dish over to them, and maybe there's been a conflict of some sort, and the one bringing the dish will say, "I'm so sorry, and let's make amends, and let's have everything good between us," when they've put a poison on the food. Now, you will say it's the poison that then hurts the other person, but they would say that it's the black magic chant that gives the poison its power. And so they do believe in it. They do believe in it very much. They believe they can do a love potion and make someone fall in love with them that way. And the idea of ghosts, mysticism, black magic, and medicine, Western medicine, are all connected there in Chuuk. They believe in a ghost world and a human world. And so you and I are in the human world right now, and everybody who dies is automatically transferred into that ghost world, and they're just wandering the earth. You just can't see them. And so that's all of the Chuukese ancestors. The people in Palau also believe in the ghost world. My house that we rented during our time there was on a cliff, and people had fallen to their deaths off of that cliff. And so the local people believed the house we rented was haunted, and they did not want to live there. The owners of the house had to beg some of the younger people in their family to house sit that house until they found renters, until they found us. The truth is, I got a much lower price on that house because of their belief in ghosts. Someone would say something to me about it, and I'd say, "Well, I'm a preacher, so that don't bother me at all," right? But they believe in the ghosts very much so. And the Western medicine is connected with the black magic because, for the Chuukese people now, and it kind of varies per culture, but it's a little white pill that the doctor has given them, and they don't know what's in it. They don't know the thing that is in it. They don't know how it works. They don't know how it affects their body. It's just some kind of magical little thing. And so to them, that sounds like black magic and feels like black magic. And when they take it, maybe they feel a little funny or something. And so it's all connected there. But they do understand that there's a science to the Western medicine, but it just sounds like black magic to them. In that ghost world, they believe that pregnant women should not walk alone in the dark, especially if they're close to their delivery, because a ghost somehow wants the baby or wants to be connected with the baby. And so the ghost might turn into a human form, attack the lady, and then turn back into a ghost and back into the woods. Now, you would say it was somebody who was human all along, but they would say it was a ghost, went human, went back to ghost, and went back to the woods. They believe that a pregnant lady should not go fishing, because the ghost might jump from the water onto the fish and then onto her. But what can she do for food? So if they have a mess of fish, if they have a catch of fish and they bring that catch of fish to the shore, if somebody waves a torch over the fish, then that will scare all the ghosts away and then she's okay to eat the fish. Yeah. There are many other beliefs concerning black magic, and it's really... We talk sometimes about religion being subjective. Black magic is even more subjective. And so it's really anything you can dream up and assign to black magic. Oh, a tree fell on your house. Someone has put the black magic curse on you. And so what you going to do about it? Now, never mind the fact that there was a typhoon the night before and trees fell on lots of people's houses. You know, they'll say that. There's rats in your house. Oh, someone has put the black magic curse on you. What you going to do? And the immediate reaction is, well, I'm going to hire my own witch doctor to counteract the curse, or hire my own witch doctor to go and do a curse against that person, and maybe my curse will supersede or negate the curse they've put on me. So, oh, you've got rats in your house. Someone put the black magic curse on you. What you going to do? Well, never mind the fact that there's trash all outside the house, trash all inside the house. Remember the house that you saw? Well, the trash, they just, if they have a candy bar, they'll open the candy bar and eat it and just throw it on the ground. And it just builds a layer on the ground right outside the house. Or if they have a bag of trash, then they'll open the front door, take that bag and throw it like that. And so are there rats inside the house? Yes, there are rats. There's always rats inside the house. You know, there's rats everywhere because there's trash everywhere. But they'll say, oh, that's the black magic brought the rats inside your house. So what are you going to do about it? And like I said, this is Chuuk, and it varies some between Chuuk and Palau and in Guam. And they believe it in Guam as well, even as modern as Guam is. So our brethren in the church believe in some of these things. And it will be hard for you to reconcile the fact that they are members of the church and that they have a scientific mind and a logical mind and still believe in some of these things. And the answer to that is partly, brethren, their mothers and their fathers taught them these things. They grew up believing these things. And so it's hard to let go of anything that we were taught when we were growing up. Did your mother lie to you? Said, no, my mother would never lie to me. My mother always told me the truth. Now, she's not perfect. She may have made a mistake from time to time, but generally speaking, my mother always teaches me the truth, and I can trust 99% of what my mother said. Well, that's the way they feel. And their mothers taught them about black magic. In interviews with the brethren in the islands, I learned a couple of things. They think that if a medical doctor cannot identify what's wrong, then it's probably a black magic situation, and so they should go to the witch doctor. They believe that if they sense that something is wrong, just get a feeling that something is wrong, then that's probably a black magic curse, and they need to do their own black magic, hire their own witch doctor in order to head it off at the pass. There's a poisonous plant in Chuuk that when you're walking by, you don't walk by that plant, first of all, but if you find yourself, already upon it, then you be very, very quiet, because if you make noise and wake up that plant can do something evil to you. The poison that they get for the food, the best place to get it is from that plant or from the gallbladder of anything that's been dead for a month or bamboo pieces that have been shaved off that are very sharp can go inside the food. They believe that it's the leaves of the plant that have the power. And so they're going to respect the leaves. You talk to the leaves. One man told me, this man's father-in-law was a witch doctor. And so he said, you talk to the leaves and get the power from the leaves. He said, but these things have a regulation. And so you've got to do it the right way. You're going to mix the potion the right way. And if you don't, maybe the thing is going to backfire and come back on you. And so not everybody wants to be a witch doctor. It's not that it's easy money, because it's a dangerous thing, they think. And so they're conflicted about it, brethren, because we teach, of course, that there is no black magic. I'm going to share that with you in just a few minutes, what it is that we teach them. But they're conflicted about it. And one sister, she said, but we are Christians, so we don't believe those things. And then she said, but the witch doctor cannot cure, though, if it's too late. You got to get to him early in order for him to be able to cure it. And then she said, I should not believe those, but it happened to me and my brother and to my son. So that's what they're dealing with. They know better, but then they feel like they have experienced it, and they just can't bring the two together. They grew up believing them. Well, I wonder if there's anything that you and I have believed since childhood that maybe is difficult for us to let go of. I remember my mother telling me one time that frogs, the bumpy frogs, don't touch those. They can give you warts. And all of my life, I've thought twice about touching the bumpy frogs, right? Well, I looked it up on the internet. They don't give you warts. You can't get warts from any frogs. It's something transferred from human to human. But I grew up believing that. If a baby bird falls out of the nest, is it okay to pick him up and put him back in the nest? Because I was taught all of my life that you don't do that, because the human oils on our hands get onto that baby bird, and the mother bird will smell it and reject it, and the baby bird will be left alone. But that's not true. You can research that, and if you touch the baby bird, he's fine. The mother bird will not reject him. Well, where did that start? But it sure has been common, and even 2021, it was during the research for this lesson that I learned that's not true. And I'm telling you, this year, I told my kids, don't touch that baby bird. The mother bird will reject it, right? And so, but now, that's not true. That's not true. There's another one. How long should you wait after eating before going into the water? 30 minutes? There is no scientific evidence for cramps in our extremities because we have gone into the water just after eating. The best source for where that started is a Boy Scouts manual from 1911. That's it. But how many of us all of our lives said, you got to wait 30 minutes before going into the water because you'll get cramps and you'll sink, right? The average meal takes about 4 hours to digest. So where 30 minutes came from, we do not know. So those are some things that maybe you have understood growing up, and then now you're going to go home and you're going to check it out on the internet before you believe what I say, because I'm just one guy, one preacher who said it one time, and that's not enough to convince you, is it? Well, that's the way it is with our brethren in the islands with black magic. We've taught on it, but it's going to take a lot to go against what Mama said, and it takes a lot to go against what they feel like they've experienced. Here's a couple of more. Dogs' mouths, are they cleaner than humans' mouths? No, not really. Lightning, you've heard it does not strike the same place twice. It sure can, it sure can. Have you heard that hair and nails continue to grow after we die? They don't. And one more. I've heard that the Great Wall of China is the only man-made structure visible from the moon. It isn't. So I'm breaking your heart right now, aren't I? All of these things, you're not going to trust your mother anymore. It's all over. Well, what do we teach them? Brethren, the truth is that there is no spiritual power except from God. There is no spiritual power except from God. These beliefs are attributed to the devil, and believe that he makes them happen, or just some unknown force is what people attribute it to. Kind of like luck for us. We don't know what causes it, but if a black cat crosses my path, well, then I've got to be careful that I don't have bad luck. Well, there has to be something behind it causing it. And there is no spiritual power except from God. You remember back in Job? The devil was not able to afflict Job or his family or his livestock until God gave him permission. The devil and God are not on equal power plane. No, God is the only God, and the devil's a created being with greatly limited power. All he can do to us is tempt us. And here he was allowed to afflict Job. So the devil doesn't have the ability to do these black magic kind of things. No, not at all. And so what about crystals? You know, you can go on Amazon right now and you can buy crystals for spiritual healing. They're crystals to connect with angels, crystals to connect with deity in general. My wife does yoga, and I think yoga is great and fine. Some people apply a spiritual aspect to yoga, and there are chakras in the back, spinning discs in the back in the spiritual application of it. And they connect to different parts of our body, as the saying goes. And that is, there's a digestion chakra and there's a heart chakra. And if you've had a heart attack, maybe you need to do some yoga to reset your heart chakra and get everything working right again. So we're not making fun of those things, brethren, not at all. I respect what people believe. My question is it true? Is it true? Do I need to do heart chakra yoga to strengthen myself, or do I need to go spend $500 on crystals and put them all around my house? Well, remember with me, there is no spiritual power except from God. And so unless the Bible tells me that there's power in crystals, or unless the Bible tells me that there's such a thing as a heart chakra, then I can trust that there isn't. Look at 2 Peter 1:3. His divine power is given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness. There is no spirituality missing from your Bible. It's everything that we know spiritually, everything that is true and right spiritually is in that book. And so that gives me some framework. I can have confidence now that I don't need to buy crystals and I don't need to do the chakra thing. And I don't need to believe in black magic. Because unless God has said it, then it doesn't exist spiritually. Isn't that a great rock to plant your feet on? Doesn't that give you a great foundation in a world when spiritual things are just anything goes? You have the greatest source of stability. You have God and the Bible. And so we know so much more about the spiritual world because of what God has given us. Adapted from Shakespeare's Macbeth, and my time is up. Fillet of fennel snake in the cauldron boiled and bake, eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog, adder's fork and a blind worm's sting, lizard's leg and an owlet's wing. For a charm of powerful trouble, let a bad broth boil and bubble. Is there any power in the eye of a newt? No, because God didn't say that there was power in the eye of a newt. And so, brethren, what it comes down to then is we've got to persuade our island brethren and even some stateside brethren that these things are not true and that we don't need to change our lives for them. What happens over in the islands is they get that sensation and they think that someone's doing a witchcraft against them. And so they may spend all of the month's worth of income on hiring a witch doctor, and it greatly affects their lives. They may fall asleep crying every night for a week because they fear what the witch doctor is doing to them because they were misunderstood in a conversation with someone who now regards them as an enemy. And so it's really life-altering and it's really hurtful to them. Well, the great news is that God sets them free from that concern. God sets them free, and brethren, you and I are free as well. Thank you for your good attention this morning, and feel free to ask me any questions in the break.